Welcome to a new episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
And we are here hanging out in the studio after a week's break due to the Easter holiday, and that's okay, because sometimes you need a break
to revive.
And did you have a good Easter?
I had a good Easter, yeah. Ate a lot of food, came home, you know, stuffed full of barbecue and potato salad. It was great.
I had a good one, too. Spent Saturday with the rest of the family, and then Sunday with my immediate family here at home. And it was a nice little holiday. I played football outside with the kids, and they wore me out. I'm getting old for that crap.
Yeah.
My son pulled a fast one on me where he kicked the ball, and when I wasn't looking, he tackled me.
Oh, my God.
It's like, what the hell? You're tackling me. And he was very proud of that moment that he did that. And but, you know, I'll give him that one. But other than that, it's been a not much happened the last couple of weeks during the holiday, really. It's been kind of quiet. Work and come home and work and come home and work and come home.
Repeat.
And man, you're drinking a Topo Chico. Topo Chico. Man, that's so Mexican.
It is.
Did you drink last night? Did you have a hangover? That's what they usually drink it for.
Yeah, usually. But no, Jackie, you know, my wife, she had gotten into them. It's funny. We just, you know, picked them up at work as far as, you know, the rights to sell them. And I'm like, you know, I started getting into it.
I drank one once and I think they're disgusting.
At first, I thought they were disgusting.
I can taste, like, there's a grime in them, like the minerals. Like, I can taste it. Yeah, it's nasty.
It's like it's grainy, right?
Yeah.
I always add
lemon. Is that from eating all the tacos that you Mexicans eat? You get used to the grain in your throat?
Yes. Yes. You know? Yeah. It's because of the tacos.
I mean, you know, for anyone that has never looked at our pictures online, Matt's part Mexican, so I get them fuck with him.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and, more than you'd think.
He's like an inbreded, like, half-breed, and, you know, but that's okay.
I am two-thirds.
And speaking of websites, we've officially launched the RebelRadioPodcast.com.
Mm-hmm.
It's there, folks. You can go online. You can go find the show all in one place, so you don't have to go through. We're still on TrustMeMyJedi.com, but you don't have to weed through all the news stories. The RebelRadioPodcast.com is live for all your shows. We also started a Facebook group, so please join it so you can keep track of things. And on the site, we've got a store now. We've got a Rebel Radio coffee mug available, a tote bag, and a t-shirt. With a second t-shirt will be up later this week. Maybe even by the time this gets released, if I get it done.
Yes.
And I thought, like, I sold a shirt the other day. I was like, whoa, we sold a shirt. And it was freaking Matt buying a shirt.
I tried to put my wife's name on there.
You did, but it was still.
You're still.
So
there.
I'm waiting for the first fan to buy a shirt. Hopefully, yes. I've been trying to push them at work. If you guys, I'm like, come on, buy a shirt. It helps us out. And I'll be honest with y'all, we make about $5 a shirt, and it helps the show so we can keep it going for you. And we would love to sell enough just to be self-sustainable. That'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
If we could sell, that's 10 shirts would, well, no.
A 20?
About 20, yeah. About 20 shirts would pay for the podcast, if not,
it's not bad.
For the whole year. Even if we sold half that, we did 10 and paid for half the podcast.
I bought two shirts and a mug.
Yes, we made about $16 off of what you bought and paid for. So it's about $5 an item we made.
18 more shirts, guys.
Yeah.
18 more.
And we appreciate anybody that does. So the RebelRadioPodcast.com is now live and ready to go. Before we get going, today's movie is going to be Hellboy. That's our featured movie of the week. The 2004 film, which is a love affair of Guillermo del Toro's. It was something he pushed to do, and we're going to talk about it in a minute. But, you know, usually in Download This, we talk about things we stream, but sometimes we talk about a movie separately, and like we did the episode a few weeks ago where we talked about Black Panther for about 20 minutes.
And, yeah.
And so I saw a movie yesterday that's really, it's number one movie in theaters right now, and I know Matt's seen it, and I saw Ready Player One. And, you're going to love it.
Yeah.
It's fun as hell. They made some changes from the book, and I'm okay with that. You know, I thought it worked cinematically because there's things in the book. Anytime you have a novel, there's more exposition. It drags on a little bit at times.
Yeah.
You don't need to put all that in the film. And the changes they did make were mild and subtle, but it helped the relationship of a couple of the main characters because in the book, the relationship is extended. But in the movie, I see why they wanted to get to that importance of that relationship faster. So it made sense, the changes they made.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie is a pop culture fan's dream. There's eye candy all over the place. You're sitting there going, oh, that's so-and-so. Oh, that's so-and-so. Then something else jumps, and you're missing them all. Michael went with me, my son. He spotted the Flash. I missed it. But then I went and looked online to see what Easter eggs were in there. Definitely the Flash is in there. The Battletoads are in there. The Ninja Turtles, Spawn.
Oh, my God.
Batman. I mean, every thing that's cultural is in there. Apparently, there's some Star Wars stuff in there. It's very hidden because Disney gave Spielberg and Warner Brothers permission to do some Star Wars stuff. Mm-hmm. There's some great gag jokes. There is a Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai mentioned because Ernest Cline, the guy who wrote the novel, that's his favorite movie of all time. In fact, he got his start in Hollywood by doing a fan script sequel to Buckaroo Banzai, and people started taking notice, and he ended up writing Fanboys, and now he's in, and of course he's done novels. Ready Player One is based on a novel, so Ernest Cline is a big Buckaroo Banzai fan, so that's in the movie.
That's cool.
And it's classic Steven Spielberg. It's what he's good at, doing a popcorn flick. Ben Middleston, who played Director Krennic in Rogue One, plays a bad guy, which is something he's good at. You know,
he looks like he's got a good bad guy.
Just a fun time at the movies, and something that you're going to watch over and over again because there's so much eye candy in this film. It's like you're picking up on everything that's happening. And it's funny. It's like the film is 70% animated. It's almost an animated movie. It's maybe 30% live action because so much takes place in this world called the Oasis, which is like an online world in the future everybody escapes to. And just a fun movie. I'm gonna leave it spoiler free because it's still in theaters and you want to see it. But man, just a great time. And when you see it, we'll talk about it a little bit more because it's growing up in the 80s and the 90s. It's special. You know, anybody who grew up in those times is gonna love it. And even the kids, man. Our other podcaster, Frank, who didn't want to come on the show because he was too lazy to find his Hellboy DVDs, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And,
today, he's like, oh, I don't think Michael would get it. There's references he won't get. No, Michael got plenty of references. Mm-hmm. I don't think people realize how versed my 9-year-old is in pop culture. He yes. knows his characters and things, you know. So a fun time at the movies for sure.
And it looks like a fun time. And then it's like, you know, I've shown Jackie the trailers because she didn't know what I was talking about. I was like, how have you not seen a Ready Player One? I was like, you're on Facebook a lot. I was like,
the advertisements are all over.
Yeah, everywhere.
And
So she looked at it and she's like, wow, one made it look really fun and the other one made it look really serious. And I was like, it's probably a combination between the two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's definitely classic Spielberg, that mix of humor and there's moments in there where, like, if you get the references, you'll laugh or be like, oh, wow, it's cool. And I think I even blurted out, like, oh, in the theater. And I was like, oh, shit, did someone hear me do that? Because there was a couple of moments I was like, that was cool, you know? And so it's a fun, fun movie, man. It's, you know, Spielberg's done a lot of really serious stuff in the last 15 years, and they're great movies. But it's really awesome to see him go back to a pop culture film. Like, I really always dream that he would come back and do another Jurassic film, but he produces them.
Yeah.
Man, how cool would it be for him to come back and maybe finish out Jurassic movies with, like, if he does Jurassic World 3 or 4 or something like that, you know?
That would be cool. And bring back the, I guess the island's going to explode. So, yeah, it'd be something in the city. So, something similar to the New World or, Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park 2, isn't it Jurassic Park 2 in the New World?
The Lost World.
Lost World.
He directed. And admittedly, that's maybe one of Spielberg's weaker films of all time. Jurassic Park's so good, but The Last World was like, Vince Vaughn before he was Vince Vaughn. It was weird. It was like, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird seeing Vince Vaughn in that role.
The whole film's supposed to be a homage to the Godzilla movies, but it's just like, ugh. Oh, and for Godzilla fans of Ready Player One, there's a great moment in it, you know. I'll just leave that at that. But just a fun movie. Spielberg, man, we've talked before on the show. We did Jurassic Park, you know, a few episodes ago. He's one of our greatest directors of all time, and he continues to be. And you know, it's just go see Ready Player One.
Go see it. I mean, Spielberg is stamped on it. It's going to be good.
All right, and we're going to change things up a little bit here because, you know, we're always coming with new ideas for the show, and we usually do news at the end of our film discussion, but we're going to do a news segment at the end where we focus on Star Wars news, but we're going to talk a little news here before we get into Hellboy because it's been kind of a slow couple of weeks of holiday, but so we have just a couple of things. But I know you haven't read it, but have you heard of Why the Last Man?
No.
It's a comic where in the future there's only one man left, and the world's full of women, and it's an adventure about how he goes on to survive in this world and comes across, and you would think it would be a show like, oh, I'm the only dude alive. Oh man, I get to do the deed with all these. And that's not what it's about. It's more about these women that have taken over the world and different things that happen. I've read the whole series, and I'm a little behind on what it was. It was several years ago I read it, but it was a great comic book series. And there's been talks of getting off the ground for years in a movie, but it would work better as a TV series. And FX has picked it up for pilot. So nice. Hopefully it gets picked up as a show. And if you ever get a chance to pick up the trades or even digitally read them, Why the Last Man is it's worth a read, because it's only 60 issues, I think, or so. So okay. It's not an overly long comic, and just a great story to read. And so it's coming to FX, and the comic book world just continues to expand in movies and televisions. And we're getting all this Marvel and DC stuff. It's good to see some stuff. Why the Last Man was done by Image. So
yeah, something different. I mean, I know it looked like we were going to have a surge of these, these cult following comics whenever Kick-Ass came out. And then you had Scott Pilgrim. And I'm not saying that those were like fantastic. Right. I think Kick-Ass was pretty good. And then it fell short, coming out on the second movie.
I love Scott. I think Scott Pilgrim's really good.
Scott Pilgrim's really good. It's done really well. And that character, he's the same guy in every movie, but it's right. that was
Michael Cern. Yeah.
Yeah, that was his role. He was meant to do that. I figured we'd get more. Looks like it's coming in little spurts. So maybe right. we'll get a couple more like we did last time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, because also they announced that, they're doing a TV series, on Amazon based on The Boys, which is another comic, independent comic done by Garth Ennis, and it's extremely violent and extremely unpolitically correct. And and Carl Urban's going to star in that. And that's cool because I love some Carl Urban. Carl Urban's one of those guys, man, that like he's one of those guys that's like, why is he not a bigger star? He's in Star Trek and everything, but like, and he did Dread and he was in Thor Ragnarok, but mm-hmm. like, it just, like, Urban just seems like he deserves to be, like, top billing sometimes. I don't know, man. I just like him in everything he does.
He's a good actor. He's definitely one of those guys that, is underrated, and you could probably plug in a lot of roles.
Right.
You just forget about him because the list is so long the A-list is so long. He's definitely, he's definitely up there. He's definitely A-list material. Like, right. I loved his performance in all three Star Trek films.
Yeah, and I wasn't, it's funny. I'm not a huge fan of the Dread movie. I think it's okay. But there's like, there's comic book fans out there that like think you're freaking crazy if you don't love Dread. I thought it was all right, you know? But I liked him in it, and I wanted to see more Dread. And I know they're trying to get a sequel off the ground through Underground, petitions and things like that. I don't know if it ever happened because the movie made almost no money at the box office.
Yeah.
And it's had some success with streaming and DVD sales. But I like him DVD. In the role as Dredd,
Yeah.
But I just thought the movie was all right. I didn't think it was anything special, But there's people out there who really loved it. Maybe I'm not a huge Judge Dredd fan. Maybe that's why I didn't love the movie. I don't know.
It's definitely, I guess that's another one of those cult followings, Judge Dredd.
It's better than a Stallone movie.
Yeah, it is. Did I save myself with that? Movie. The Stallone movie.
I'm the law. But you know what? I was reading an article about how, as Dredd, the Stallone movie got a lot of things right, apparently, about how the world worked. I don't know. And it was with a whole
cannibals?
Article. Yeah, and the whole article was explaining how the Stallone movie got a lot of things right, but yet the comedy and the other things made it so wrong. So who knows? So we got Carl Urban doing The Boys. Last news thing we're going to talk about before we get into Hellboy is The Last Starfighter is going to get a reboot. And it's from the Gary, I wrote it down here, Gary Whitta, who helped write Rogue One. And he's rebooting The Last Starfighter. And there's already concept art out there. And it looks like this might happen. And
Who better to do it than someone who's done a Star Wars film?
Right. And I think he was involved in the original, if I remember right, Gary Whitta was. I have to look it up. But, this is a movie that's from my childhood that I really like a lot. And I kind of am glad they're going a bit of a reboot route. He's even talking like it's going to be a... maybe, let me check. No, I don't think he did help write it. Okay. So maybe he's just rebooting it. And I think this is a movie that... shouldn't be remade, but may reboot the right way, to do it. Because it's, I'm getting tired of these movies. Like, I don't think I mentioned the show, I recently watched Blade Runner. And I enjoyed it a lot, the sequel to it. But at the same time, I was like, these movies where we're getting sequels 30 years later, they don't always turn out great. Because they're trying to catch lightning in a bottle twice. And I think the way to go with Last Starfighter is to reboot it, not to do a remake.
Mm-hmm.
And... you can pay homage to the original film and even have ties with it. But I think Last Starfire would lend itself to a remake, to a reboot slash sequel. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because with today's video game world, you know, you could have a kid tied in where he's playing a game and he gets, you know, sucked into this whole Last Starfire world, you know? You've seen The Last Starfire.
It's been a while. But it's probably been like 10 years since I've seen it. But yeah, no, it's a good film. 80s, right? Mm-hmm. That is 80s. Okay. It looked very 80s to me whenever I watched it. That was back whenever I was super familiar with, you know, I thought about movies differently, you know, just solely from a moderate fan standpoint and didn't look into other things. Like, you know, for the longest time, I thought, you know, Robin Hood, you know, Prince of Thieves with Kevin Costner was the best film ever because it had flaming arrows and he split arrows while in the woods. And while it is entertaining,
if you realize it's not, now when you watch it, like, wow, there's parts of this are really bad.
Yeah. I'm like, this is not as good as I thought it was when I was a kid, you know, drinking a ton of Pepsi and eating Totino's pizza rolls while watching it.
Yeah, but The Last Starfire, I haven't watched in a while, but I imagine that movie will pop up on the show eventually. But I imagine it holds up pretty well because I remember as a kid liking it. So I'm down for a reboot of it. I would love to see a new Last Starfighter in theaters. Yeah. You know, and I hope it happens, man. You know, the concept art looks great.
It does.
You
know?
So we'll see what happens with The Last Starfire reboot. So that's the main news stuff. Do you have any news that I might have missed that you're thinking of? It's been kind of slow a couple weeks.
It's been pretty slow.
There's some Star Wars news. We're going to talk about that later.
Yeah, there's little updates. Nothing major, I don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's get into Hellboy.
Yeah.
You know, Hellboy, the 2004 film directed by another Oscar-winning actor. Man, we keep on a roll, or as director, I should say, as he just recently won for The Shape of Water. And Hellboy is directed by Del Toro, who did the first... He did Hellboy 1 and Hellboy 2. And now, next year, we're getting this Hellboy reboot with David Harbour. Is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
And we'll see how that goes. They're going to make an R-rated Hellboy. What's funny is, when he did Hellboy in 2004, he wanted to make it R-rated. And Universal's like, no, let's not, because we... R-rated superhero films weren't the thing. We didn't have Deadpool and Logan and all that out yet. And so he found ways to make it violent without the blood. Like there's a scene where coins are thrown to simulate something, you know, happen instead of instead of blood.
And they wanted a gumball machine at first, and they wanted gumballs to fly instead of coins, but they ended up going with the payphone, which I think was more appropriate in a subway. I don't know how you'd work in a gumball machine in a subway. But yeah, that's a really good scene when he's fighting the Hound of Resurrection.
Right. But the film stars Ron Perlman, who's like born for the role. It was Del Toro's first choice from immediately.
Actually, both Del Toro and Mark.
Right.
Yeah.
Mark.
What can I think of the actual creator's name?
Oh,
Mike McNolan.
Selma Blair, of course, plays... I can't read my notes.
Liz Sherman.
And Doug Jones plays, of course, Abe Sapien. And Doug Jones has always worked with Del Toro in a lot of films. He was in Pan's Labyrinth with him. He did several other characters in Hellboy 2 besides Abe, you know, because he's like the makeup guy. He always does stuff. He's the creature in The Shape of Water, you know, and that's his go-to guy. And it has the late, great John Hurt plays Professor Broom in it, who Hurt's one of those guys that... When he's on screen, he immediately gets your attention just because he's one of our classically trained actors.
And he's a classically trained actor.
You know, are the classically trained actors a dying breed with this older generation, with the Patrick Stewarts and John Hurt as they die off? Or are we going to get new classically trained actors that lived in Britain and grew up and did all that? I wonder.
I hope so. It's like, I hope that, you know, we don't get like a Justin Bieber, you know, or something.
Wow, you just Bieber pulled a Justin Bieber
the Terminator.
You just pulled a Justin Bieber on Red Bull Radio Podcast.
I did. I have this fear that you know, something is going, that the movie industry will be like the music industry.
Wow. So, man, now if we get a bunch of teeny bopper girls listening to the show now, well, at least if it gets us downloads, right?
Yeah.
You know? Justin Bieber. So, I saw Hellboy in theaters. Did you?
I did not. I saw it on DVD. I saw the Golden Army in theaters.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not the first one.
What year did you graduate high school?
I graduated 2005.
So you were still in high school when Hellboy came out. So you were too busy like chasing tail.
You know. I was a band geek still, so
so you're like, oh, Hellboy, that looks stupid. You're probably, I'm gonna go see This religious movie over here or something. I don't know. Pan Geek. Or you were probably watching American Pie movies in 2004.
Yeah, probably.
Like, oh, it's about band.
Yeah.
So you watched the DVD. You know, Hellboy's one of those characters that, as a comic fan, I knew who he was, but I never really read the stuff because I wasn't into it. But my buddy Mark was a big Hellboy fan.
The artwork's great.
Yeah, and he likes it. And it's funny. I'm different to that. Like, I think Mignola's stuff's okay, but that's just me. Maybe it's the style. But I still think the character's cool, and I have to admit that the Hellboy movie was my first real take on Hellboy that I had seen. And I remember walking out of the movie really enjoying it. And Hellboy's one of those movies that there's a pre-comic book. There's a comic book era from, like, 98 to 2008, which is the pre-MCU universe, you know, of comic book movies, where we got things like Hellboy, the X-Men films, Spider-Man films are really good, but are looked at differently than the post-Iron Man era. Now comic book movies are all judged based on MCU, it seems like.
Yeah.
And that's okay. It's just a different era. You know, it's like we went from, like, let's try out these comic book movies in the late 90s, early 2000s to, like, let's really get into the comic book movies. And so, yeah, a lot of hit or misses. I think Hellboy, critically wise, the critics weren't huge on it, but I think fan-wise, it's definitely a hit.
Oh, yeah. It made its money. It
made enough to get a sequel. Yeah. Unfortunately, the second one didn't make enough money.
Yeah, it was the second one that fell short big time. And I was really hoping to get Hellboy 3, and I think they really should have just given it to Guillermo del Toro.
Right.
You know, they could have waited another 4 years like they did and pop it out in 2012.
Right.
Or they could have released it next year instead of a reboot.
Right.
But yeah, we're just fans.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Universal Pictures, their relationship with Del Toro is interesting because he really wanted to do a Creature from the Black Lagoon movie, and they said, no, we have our ideas for the Dark Universe that we're going to do the Universal Pictures. Like, well, that turned out well for you guys. Mm. Have you watched The Mummy?
I didn't
Not
even bother.
Very good. I had a free rental, luckily. and it's funny, there's a movie in there, but it's just so it just didn't come out. It just didn't come together right. And so, yeah, maybe you should have hired Del Toro. But you know what? He said, screw y'all. I'm going to go make my own monster movie. And he made The Shape of Water.
What's better, Brendan Fraser's Mummy or John Cruise?
The first Tom one. Cruise, you mean? Yeah. John Cruise? Who the fuck's John Cruise?
I thought I said Tom Cruise.
Neither one of them.
Neither one of them
I don't think Brendan Fraser's movie's that.
I
think
other
they're
movies.
Okay for 1999. I told someone else at work this one time, have you watched The Mummy recently? The Brendan Fraser one. They're pretty bad.
I like the gunfight action. I like the old school.
And that's the thing. Steven Sommers, as a director, always had good action scenes.
Yeah.
But the plot and the acting in it's pretty bad. Frazier couldn't act his way out of a box.
Yeah.
You know, and that's my biggest problem with that is Frazier. I just can't. I never liked him as an actor.
I love the Western. I feel like it's almost like a sci-fi Western almost because.
A little bit.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit. I know it's not like science fiction, but it's fiction. You know, maybe you could make a small argument that it's sci-fi, but it's a fiction, you know, Western, which is fiction. Aren't Westerns mainly fiction? You know, not all of them are built off of tall tales.
But basically, Universal should have let Del Toro make his Creature in Black Lagoon movie, and he could have launched their universe better, and we'd be getting more Universal monster
for
movies.
For sure, for sure.
But either way, we're talking Hellboy. I've really come to enjoy this film more and more over the years. And when I watched it this week for the podcast, I hadn't watched it probably, you know, 4 or 5 years. And yeah. I'm like, and it's still really, it gets better with viewings. It's almost like if Hellboy came out now in this current comic book era, I think maybe it would be better received. I think in 2004, maybe critics didn't like, what, it's a creature from hell, deals with Nazis and all this. And I think critics just weren't in tune with the movie. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
It's got a real subtle, dark sense of humor throughout it. It's got a subtle religious vibe to it because Hellboy has certain beliefs, even though he's from hell. He carries the cross with him. And just a lot of deep themes in it, but also, like I said, a kind of a dark sense of humor throughout it. But also really evil villains.
Yeah. And it's like, I really like, you know, whenever he's on the operating table, and that leech got onto him, and it's like, it laid 5 eggs in you in the few minutes that it was on you. He's like, didn't even bother to buy me dinner. I like that kind of humor.
Oh, Perlman is absolutely fantastic in this.
Yeah.
In fact, I think his performance as Hellboy, dare I say, would put it in top 5 bringing characters to life.
Yeah.
Along with Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man, Ron Perlman doing Hellboy, and
Ryan Reynolds.
You know, I can't give him props, dude.
I feel like that's who Deadpool is, though.
Only because it's the only character. I just can't.
Maybe not top five. Maybe he falls just outside of it.
Yeah, as Reynolds, man, I just.
Because who would you do?
I think
Keaton's Batman, West's Batman.
I would pick Bale's Batman probably. Oh yeah, I'm not even thinking villains here. Heath's Joker over Nicholson.
Yeah, he's
or Romero even. And then honestly, recently Michael B. Jordan's Killmonger.
Oh yeah,
I might be my five bringing characters to life. You know, mm-hmm. And then so you said, like you said, I think Ryan Reynolds, Chris Evans, they sit just outside of it.
Okay,
you know, they're definitely top 10. But and Benedict Cumberbatch, I'd put him in there, too, because he's perfect as Doctor Strange.
Yeah, he is good Doctor Strange.
It's hard with the Hulk because we haven't had consistency. I'm not a fan of Ruffalo. I never have been. I'm fine with him, but I like Norton better. And then the other MCU characters, they're serviceable to their roles. I think Tom Holland, the more I see him as Spider-Man, is going to jump up on that list real fast.
Yeah, I think
he could jump in the top five, you know, if we get to see more of him, because he's fantastic.
I really like Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man. I feel like he's still, but like you said, you know, Holland is like.
I think Holland's right better. There. Yeah, I think Holland's better even after just one movie and
I feel like I need one more movie to make sure.
But Perlman's definitely up there, man. And Doug Jones, the amazing job in the makeup and the effects bringing Abe Sapien. This guy has done some remarkable stuff over the years as makeup effects, and that's what he's known for. If you've seen Pan's Labyrinth, you know, it's bringing the Fawn to life and everything he does. He's just spectacular behind the makeup and effects. And then Selma Blair, you know, she does a great job with, Liz Sherman. Liz. I keep forgetting her character's name. And she does such a great job of portraying this darkness that she deals with and dealing with it and controlling herself so that she doesn't hurt anybody because she's so afraid to fail or hurt someone.
Mm-hmm.
But Hellboy is there the entire time to love and support her because he cares so deeply about her. And that's where the human side comes out. Here's this demon that came from the portal from hell, but he was raised by good people. So he's got this big heart about him. He might act tough like on the operating table and in battle, but he's got a great big heart. Mm-hmm. You know, Hellboy really cares about his family and his people. And it shows, especially in the scene where Professor Broom is killed, you know, and he has this calm, cool demeanor about him. Like, you know, he's angry and he wants revenge, but he's, you know, and he can't go out in public to pay his respects. So he's watching the funeral from the rooftop. And there's just this heart about Hellboy that you don't always get in a character behind makeup and behind special effects and a dark character.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. And it's funny how they wanted to alter his character a little bit. They wanted to, what the studio wanted, had thought about making him human. And then he gets angry and he turns into a hell creature.
Right.
Or he came from hell and he's just a human from hell. And then they're like, no, we're, you know, Guillermo del Toro shot it all down. He's like, we're going to make this like the comics. In fact.
Well, they did some things there because in the comics he has more like cloven feet. His feet are smaller. And it just didn't work special effect wise in movies.
They only did it for the doomsday scene or the apocalypse scene.
Right.
And then one thing that did work out was that, you know, the right hand of doom. You know, his big whammer, what is it? He called it a whopper?
Yeah.
A whammer? Look at that whammer. That right hand of doom was able to fit on the right hand because Ron Perlman was left-handed. And at first they thought he was right-handed. So they're like, oh, crap, we're going to have to change the character. They're able to keep continuity. Ron Perlman worked out a lot for the film. He worked out on his off days. He worked out during the shots. So he stayed in really good shape. You can tell that. I love the his revolver, the Samaritan. I wish they sold something that big, but it'd probably blow my ass away.
Right.
He's like, I'm not a good shot, but the Samaritan here has pretty big bullets.
Right. And he also not only worked out every day, he also read tons of Hellboy comics to make sure he's ready for the role.
Heck yeah.
And it shows because he portrays the character in such a way like it pops off the comic book page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and man, it's a shame we didn't have him as Cable, because I was really hoping either him or one of my favorite wrestlers, why can't I think of his name right now? Big Sexy, Kevin Nash.
Oh, Nash.
Nash, Kevin Nash. I don't know about acting, but he would have looked the part.
He's a little old now. Isn't Nash pushing 70 by now?
He's got to be mid-60s, 70. Yeah. I wonder how old. Yeah, because he must have been 50s whenever he played the Russian,
right?
In Punisher, and then of course he was Super Shredder. He played Super Shredder in part two.
But yeah, man, you know, and it's based on a couple of Hellboy comics, and that's the thing too. Like, a lot of comic movies are original adaptions, and this was based on two stories: Seeds of Destruction, and I wrote the other one down. Where did my note go?
Right Hand of Doom, right?
Right Hand of Doom and Box Full of Evil. So it was based on three stories. And I like that they weren't afraid to use the source material but yet add some new stuff to it, you know, because, you know, they could have easily just written a new story for it. But I kind of like that sometimes. It's just like, I was listening to I Sell Comics the other day with Mike and Ming, and it's like, this Dark Phoenix movie that got pushed back to February. Does anyone really care? I mean, I'll go see it because it's X-Men, but it's like, we already did the Phoenix thing in X-Men 3. That didn't turn out very well.
Yeah.
But yet, you have the story right there in pages. Why can't we just get the comic adapted to screen? In fact, it's sitting right there. I picked up, nice. I found a copy of the Dark Phoenix Saga, the old trade paperback in Half Price Books yesterday for like $6. I was like, dude, Dark Phoenix Saga for $6? It's right there on paper. Why can't we get that on the screen? Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that's cool about Hellboy. They took some stories from the comics and put it on the screen. Very similar to what they did with Sin City. Maybe that's a Dark Horse comic thing. Let's just put it on the screen, you know? And it works well. And one scene that I have read Seeds of Destruction since. I just hadn't read Hellboy to the point. But I think the scene where he takes the dead guy from the grave to help get him through the tunnels, I think that's from one of the other stories. And I really like that scene. I like kind of that twisted humor. It might be my favorite scene in the movie. He saw this dead guy, and they're looking at him like, what the hell? The police or the rest of the members of the BRPD that work with him. Because mm-hmm. The FBI works with the BRPD, which is the Bureau of
Paranormal
Research and Development, the BPRD.
BPRD.
And they're like, this is crazy, but they just go with it. And I think that's what's cool is, like, Hellboy exists in this world, and he's a mythological character of the outside world, like tabloid-type stuff, but mm-hmm. yet the FBI are just like, okay, and he's carrying a corpse on his back, and he's talking to the corpse, and the corpse is talking all kinds of smack in another language subtitle, like, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
It's really funny and dark. And that's probably my favorite scene in the movie. Do you have a favorite scene?
Man, which one is it? I guess it would have to be whenever he's the beginning scene, whenever they're first running into the Hound of Destruction.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just like, you know, the lines. I'm a sucker for one-liners, where he talks about how, you know, he's not a good shot, but his bullets are pretty big. And then he shoots it, and Abe's like, oh, I found the page. He's like, we're already taken care of. You know, cocky, shows a lot of his character.
Right.
I really like that scene. A little bit of action, character development, all mixed in one.
And what's funny is, talk about, like, Guillermo del Toro is, he's a big deal now after winning the Oscar. And, you know, going back to this film that's 14 years before he won the Oscar, you know, you see, like, as a director, man, this guy, cinematically, there's some, like, really great shots in this movie. Like, at the end where he's fighting the huge, what's it called? It's a bigger version of Samuel, right, at the end?
Oh, yeah,
And, like, there's this scene where the camera pulls back, and this huge monster is there, and he's holding the Hellboy up in the air. And it's almost like one of those scenes that you want to screenshot and frame on your wall. And you see Del Toro's development as a director getting better and better from Blade 2 to this. I've never seen The Devil's Backbone, but I need to because I heard it's really good. It's one of his early films, to Pan's Labyrinth, to even Pacific Rim. There's just some really great cinematic shots in it. The scene in the air in Pacific Rim where he turns with a sword and cuts the kaiju in half is just a remarkably shot scene. And Shape of Water is full of those kind of scenes. It's why you need. Have you watched it yet?
I have not.
You need to, man, because the whole movie is at Del Toro's absolute best. I still lean towards Pan's Labyrinth as my favorite film of his, but I think Shape of Water, the more I watch it, it may grow on me more because it's a remarkable film in its own right.
Okay.
And Del Toro is just like, you see the brilliance back in this film in 2004. Like, man, this guy really knows how to direct movies, and it paid off years later. He finally won an Oscar, and I hope he does a lot of other great stuff.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on Del Toro's directing of Hellboy?
No, it's, I think he did a really good job. It's a good film. He was able to keep continuity for the most part. You know, he derived his storyline from the comics, did a great job developing Hellboy's character with you know, probably most of that credit going to Ron Perlman, just being a great actor and his, you know, his interpretation of Hellboy. You know, overall, great job, good comic that probably should have gone for a second sequel.
And what's funny is we almost got Vin Diesel as Hellboy.
Really?
The studio wanted Vin Diesel. But Del Toro said, I'm not doing it without Perlman. He wanted Perlman from the very beginning. Apparently, back when he first started developing Hellboy in 1999, he always wanted Perlman. That was his guy. After doing Blade 2 with him, he was always looking Perlman. And the studio was like, but they realized that Del Toro, he was going to walk if he didn't get Perlman. And Del Toro's always done that. He's very hardcore in his casting. He wasn't going to make Shape of Water unless... the actress's name that he wrote the movie for, who plays the main character in. Mm-hmm. If she wouldn't do it, he wouldn't have done it. You know, and he said before, I love that director stays with his beliefs and his casting and the reason he makes a movie. And I can't imagine. I know you're a Vin Diesel guy, but I just don't see him in this role.
I think there is a role that was meant for him, and that was Riddick. I think he made a great Riddick, and that I don't think Hellboy was his calling. Maybe it would have been.
And still unfortunately, good. Riddick just never got the directors and the writing behind it.
Yeah,
you know, so it just fizzled out. But yeah, I can't imagine anyone but Perlman in the role of this film. You know, it just wouldn't work. Let's talk a little bit about some things in the film that people may not know, like the BRPD. You know, there's more characters in the BRPD that we don't see in the film. And I keep swirling through my notes and screwing them up. But there's a statue of a character in the back, and it's a guy from the story arc, Almost Colossus, and his name is Roger the Homunculus. I'm probably totally not saying that right. But apparently there's a ring on his groin that I guess he comes to life when someone takes the ring off, or he goes through periods of dormancy. And he's a special PRBD agent, just like Abyss.
Okay.
But you see him as a statue in the background. And I guess the plan was eventually we would have gotten him in Hellboy 3 when he came out of his dormancy, but we never got a Hellboy 3.
Of course.
And I thought that was cool because I knew in the comics, there's BRPD comics where several other characters besides Liz and Abe that are involved in that group of otherworldly people that help save the world. You know, so anything you found about the movie that people may not know? I just put you on the spot.
Yeah, you put me on the spot. Let's see. It took Guillermo del Toro 6 years to bring Hellboy to the screen. I know that it took a long time for him to bring it to the screen, but I didn't realize it was 6 years. I thought it was four.
Right. When Hellboy tells Myers, who got you this job pushing pancakes? It's actually said on purpose that way because it's in the comics in the Right Hand of Doom story. It's like
that's right.
They refer to him as pancakes.
Pancakes.
And so a couple things, and of course the Vin Diesel thing was a big thing.
I know the baby Hellboy, Samuel, Ivan the Corpse, the train driver, and Cronin were all voiced by Guillermo del Toro.
Right. Oh, speaking of, we didn't even talk villains in this movie, okay? Man, one thing that del Toro is really great at is really great villains. Even in Pan's Labyrinth, when you watch Shape of Water, Michael Shannon's villain character is excellent in it. And this movie has some really dark scare, like Cronin is like freaking badass.
Yeah, dude.
You know, and I was the big scary, the main bad guy.
The assassin?
The master. Yes. No, Cronin was the master.
Yeah,
Cronin was the assassin.
I just knew Hitler's top assassin.
Right, it was Cronin, right? But the ball guy, the master.
Oh, Rasputin.
Rasputin, that's right. And like he's like legitimately kind of creepy in this movie.
Yeah,
he is. And Del Toro's really good that even in Hellboy 2, The Golden Army, the villains are like really just...
Yeah, the elves.
Yeah, scary and villainous. Yeah, I don't know, it's evil.
Yeah, evil. And pretty powerful, too. They all just seem like they could edge out Hellboy.
Yeah. And that's one thing I love about Del Toro is really great villains in his films. What else is there to say about Hellboy? I mean, does it hold up today?
I think it still holds up today.
Like I said, I think there's this era of comic films between 1998 and 2008, pre-MCU. Like there's some that aren't so good, like the Rise of the Silver Surfer and the and Daredevil. But there's some that are really good that kind of went under the radar because they weren't the era we're in now. We're mm-hmm. now every year, you know, there's three or four comic book films coming out in theaters. I mean, look at this year. We are at Black Panther. We have Avengers. We have Ant-Man and Wasp. We have Aquaman. There's four films this year. Teen Titans Go to the Movie technically is a comic movie. So we have five. It is. You know, and in 2004, you know, this was pre-Batman Begins because it was come out the next year. Mm-hmm. I don't know what other comic movies came out in 2004. I think one of the Fantastic Fours did.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, because I think the first one did, and then 2006 was the second one. So, you know, this was just a different era comic movie, but in that era,
I think... Ghost Rider.
Yeah, which wasn't very good.
No.
But I think Hellboy might be the best independent movie of that era. You know, you can argue the X-Men and Spider-Man films were the best films of that era.
Oh, yeah.
But I think Hellboy's up there as one of the better films of that era.
It's better than Jonah Hex.
Yeah. And I think Hellboy is still significant today. It's still having influence because we're getting a reboot next year.
Yeah.
So I think that shows you that people still, that this character is popular enough to get another film made. And at least from the Del Toro era, we got two films and two animated movies. And the anime movies are really good. I really enjoy those.
I have not seen the anime
movies. Yeah, you can find them on Blu-ray for like $8-$9.
I used to always see it in like a gift set where you could get like all
You can get both movies together. You can get both the anime movies on one DVD or one Blu-ray. And I would have liked to have seen Hellboy 3, but we didn't get it, and Del Toro's
moved on. He even hopped on Twitter and said, if we get 24 million shares or something like that.
and Pearlman even went as far as in 2012 redoning the four-hour makeup process for a Make-A-Wish for a little boy who wanted to meet Hellboy.
Oh, yeah, that's
and,
right.
And I thought that was really cool of him. He's always plays these tough guys, you know, Sons of Anarchy and Hellboy and Blade, but he's really... Pearlman's just like his character in Hellboy. He's really a guy with a big heart.
Yep.
And he did that for that kid, and I'm sure that kid remembered it always. You mm-hmm. know? And
the Hellboy.
Yeah. And it's going to be weird seeing David Harbour in the role because Pearlman owns this motherfucker. You know, it's like, and we'll see. Is there anything you would change about the original Hellboy movie?
I don't think so. I really liked it. Sergeant Myers.
Yeah.
It sucks that Broom had to die, but you know, I think it was, you know, to tug at Hellboy's emotions and to make him remember right. him, you know, especially towards the end. It was
vital to him saving the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that I think they do a good job balancing the characters in the movie. We get just enough Abe and Liz, but it's still a Hellboy movie.
Yes.
And there were talks at one time they were going to do a BRPD movie to spin off of it, but it just never came to fruition. There's still been talks to this day about there being a BRPD movie. And maybe one day we'll get one. Maybe this new Hellboy is successful. We'll get it.
We got an RPD movie. Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah. You know what? When one of the kids was born, I think it was Wyatt, that was playing on the hospital, and I watched about 20. It was terrible.
Yeah,
I can't even get 20 minutes into it.
Mm-hmm.
But no, there's not a whole lot I would change about the original Hellboy. Pacing-wise, I think people might say it's a little slower than today's comic book movies, but sometimes I think that's a problem with some of today's comic book movies is they don't take the time to let the characters breathe and to develop them, which is something that Black Panther did a good job with. And I think it's okay to develop a story. You don't always have to do a comic book film, and let's just get to the cool action first, you know? I mean, we don't see Hellboy fully in this movie till what, 15 minutes into it?
Yeah.
You know, we see him as a baby at the beginning, probably 20 minutes in. And that's okay. You don't need him at the very beginning. And I think it works really well. And I wish that we would have had more Del Toro Hellboy films, but... You assholes didn't go see it at the box office.
Yes.
No, I don't mean you assholes as listeners. I just meant general public yes. didn't go see it.
You assholes.
and I saw the second one in theaters too, actually, with Mary when I first started dating her. We had gone to Austin to visit my sister. And,
okay.
I think that was the first time Mary met my sister, and we all went to see Hellboy 2 while we were in Austin. And I think that's the last time I ever went to a regular theater with just regular seats, no stadium style seating, mm-hmm. no fancy screens or recliners. It was just a regular old school theater. I remember nice. I'm almost 99% sure that's the last time I saw a movie in a regular old school theater was in 2008 for Hellboy 2. But Hellboy, man, a good movie.
Yes.
And something that I enjoy. I don't know why it's taking me so long to watch it again. I need to watch Hellboy 2 now that I watched Hellboy 1.
Yes.
You know, and get back into it. So, that's it for Hellboy. You have any final thoughts on Hellboy before we do download this and a couple other things?
No, that's, pretty much covered a lot of it.
Yeah. And read the comics too, man.
Artwork on those.
Yeah,
rules.
Mike Mignola does a good stuff. I need to pick up some Hellboy comics now that I have done this show, because I'm guilty of never reading them. And when I was in Half Price Books yesterday, I actually looked, but I want to start at the beginning with Seeds of Destruction, and they didn't have a copy of Seeds of Destruction. They had a couple of the other stories, and I understand you can, from what I've read, that you can kind of read the Hellboy books without reading the other ones, but that's just me. I want to start at the beginning, so one day I'll read it. Maybe at Compalooza.
Maybe at Compalooza. We'll find it. Go to the Dollar Comic Book.
Yeah, and a lot more coming up on Compalooza soon. We are going to be part of the podcast partnership program again this year.
Awesome.
We're going to be doing a live show from the floor again. We're not going to tell you what movie it is yet, but more on that in the next month as we get closer to Compalooza Memorial Day weekend in Houston, Texas. So download this. This is where we tell you what we've been streaming, downloading, watching lately. I'll go first, I guess, this time. I usually like, I've been kind of lazy the last couple weeks. I can't remember at the last show if I mentioned watching The Greatest Showman a couple weeks ago.
You asked Frank about it.
I watched that with Hugh Jackman. It's a musical, and normally it's not my thing, but this was really good, man. Hugh Jackman's a talented son of a bitch. It's like, if you're a dude, you should want to be Hugh Jackman, because he's can do everything, you know? And it's a good movie, man. Really good music, really well shot. And I know they changed the story of Barnum, P.T. Barnum, quite a bit for the movie, because they had Hollywood it, you know, but it's still really well done, and I think it's really worth watching. Other than that, I tried to start getting, you know, I started watching Voltron on Netflix, and I couldn't get into it, but then someone was like, oh, you got to watch it, so I did rewatch the first pilot episode last night, actually, and so I'm going to try to start watching Voltron again and get back into the new cartoon. Mm-hmm. But I think that's all I've watched. I've kind of had not as much, you know, it's baseball season.
Yeah, it is baseball
season. Once the Astros start, I don't watch as much in the evenings because I'm watching games. So what have you downloaded or watched or streamed lately?
So I sent you a video the other day about the Eclipse, the Mitsubishi Eclipse, the 99 Eclipse. And
did you send it on Facebook Messenger?
I sent it on Facebook.
I probably didn't
Messenger.
Even look at it.
You looked at it a little bit, but I talked about, you know, Fast and the Furious, and so I also saw a video about the history of the Supra, which are two films from Fast and the Furious, the first Fast and the Furious, and it made me want to watch it because it's one of the films that really got me and my cousin into cars. You know, we have family members that were mechanics, but you know, that's what made us into, you know, car, you know, these dudes that liked cars, you know, liked cars even more, and that's what made him want to be a mechanic. And so you know, that movie showed people what you could do with a, you know, with the right engine, a K20A2, if you know engine talk, that's an Acura engine that's highly moddable. The 2JZ, the infamous 2JZ, which was created by Toyota and was it BMW? I think it was BMW.
Right.
So they both, BMW and Toyota, made the Supra because Toyota didn't know anything about sports cars. So who better to go to than a British company, or I mean a German company, and build an engine. And so it was just, I just wanted to go back and remember how I felt and how it was seeing that movie. You know, and we talk about John Woo's The Way of the Bullet, seeing the bullet come out of the chamber and, you know, coming at it from different angles. That was the first movie where I ever saw the engine firing up, the NOS going into the intake.
You know, it's
catching
all CGI,
fire.
Though, right?
Yeah, it's all CGI. But it's still, it's like, whoosh. I mean, the Mazda RX-7, Nissan 240SX. My cousin owned a Nissan 240SX and actually doubled in value because of that movie. So a lot of these cars that were just like high schooler cars, you know, because you could mod them a little bit, now they were worth a little bit more. So that it did a lot for the high school kid.
So that was your download this week.
That was my download.
Mazda video.
Yeah.
Wow.
Hey man, he was in my face. I'm in your face.
I do have a couple more things. I listen to a lot of podcasts too because we're podcasters, and I listen to our local friends like Justin and George from Mind Fudge Comedy, and I listen to Carrie and Metal Geeks, and I listen to all the Kevin Smith stuff and Mike and Ming, all the Smodcast stuff. But I recently listened to, there's a new show out there on the Star Wars Junk Network called The First Star Wars Show, and it takes place like in, it's supposed to be like April 78. I'm not sure why he chose April 78. I guess it's because Star Wars has been out almost a year.
Yeah.
And it's all done retro style. It's interesting. I I find the filter he put over it a little distracting. He tries to make it sound like it's 1978, and he's kind of got a heavy Southern accent, the guy. But it's funny. It's interesting. We'll see where he goes with it. It's the first show. So, you know, he's got to develop it and see how he does with it. But it's got a lot of potential, and it's kind of fun to see. And it's funny because I kind of had an idea like that at one time.
Yeah, about doing a retro show. Talking about retro.
And I just like, I wasn't sure how to do it. But so this guy's doing it, and props to him, man, and a cool show. And I found it on Twitter, and that's how I came across it. And it's pretty cool. And other than that, I don't think I've listened to other new podcasts. I do want to give a shout out to my boy Miguel from Critical Thinking Podcast. Miguel is a local podcaster too, and he's always a big supporter of the show, and he's been retweeting stuff for us and helping. And we plan on having Miguel on a show eventually here soon. And so a shout out to Miguel for the support he gives the Rebel Radio Podcast. And he's a good dude. And so that's some of the things I downloaded. So all right, now let's talk next. We've got some Star Wars news to talk about. And this is our news segment. We're going to throw this at the end of the show most of the time, sometimes the beginning, because Star Wars, man, it just seems like every week that something goes by. And yes, there might be some weeks where we don't have any Star Wars news, but this week we have something to talk about. So, of course, Solo, A Star Wars Story is hitting theaters on May 25th. And they announced that April 13th is the big day that all the toys are coming out. So that's this Friday.
Ooh.
And so I don't know if I'm going to buy anything necessarily because, you know, I don't need more shit. But, man, I kind of wanted a figure of Glover as Lando, man, because he just looks like the yellow suit, man. That's like, it's so 70s fucking cool, you know? And we're going to get a trailer tonight. So by the time y'all hear this, the trailer will already be out. It's supposed to be during American Idol. I'm just going to wait till it goes online. I'm not watching freaking American Idol to see the Solo trailer.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm starting to get more pumped for this movie, man. You know,
now finally that stuff is coming out. I mean, that, you know, like you had mentioned earlier on an earlier show, you know, do you really have to show a Star Wars trailer? You know, do you really have to put it out there all the time? I feel like, you know, they've been kind of stingy with the Han Solo film and what they give us.
Right.
And finally they're giving us something tonight. And the toys are coming out this next Friday.
You know, and you can go to Denny's right now. You can buy little cups or trading cards at Denny's. They're doing a whole promotion. Give me more Star Wars. I'm excited for it. You know, I'm okay. They can keep making fucking Star Wars movies for 20 years. I'll go see them all. You know, it's almost to the point where Disney can make them forever. We just had to figure out a way to become immortal so we don't miss any of them.
Yes.
You know, so I'm down for more Star Wars, and I'm excited for it. You know, I recently, since last we recorded, Last Jedi came out on Blu-ray. I rewatched it. I still think it's great. In fact, I think it's getting better.
Yes.
Frank might not like it, and his cousin John might not like it, but I think they're crazy. I think in time they're going to see how good this film is. The more I watch it, I'm liking it more and more. I wasn't sure how it would be, but it's growing on me a lot more.
Yeah, and it's like, I had, you know, my wife is not a big Star Wars fan. Not at all. Tried to get her to watch Star Wars. She could never remember it. She's probably thinking of other things while it was going on. But I had her watch it, and she's like, that's a really good movie. So that's a really good movie. And you know, I rewatched it, and I think, you know, what happened with Luke, I think it's just fine what happened. You know, sometimes, you know, we lose our way, and I think that, you know, it's not too weird or too indifferent for, you know, Luke to lose his way. He made a mistake, which he instantly regretted, and then he redeemed himself by saving the rebellion, doing what he had to do to give them a chance, and then, you know, perished as he looked into the two sons.
I'm not supposed to look at the camera. We're doing selfies here. We recorded that. Looks at the camera.
I'm like, hey.
But yeah, no, I think it's really good. So man, you know, fuck the haters, man.
Yeah, man.
You know, Last Jedi rules, okay? And that's all I have to say. But then, last final news story on our Star Wars news segment before we talk about the movie we're doing next. Man, did you read that Tony Gilroy came out and talked? Was it Tony Gilroy who did the reshoots on Rogue One about how messed up the movie was? He came out and he's talking about the problems we had. Recently, he was on a podcast and talking about when they brought him in that this movie was like an unedited mess. They had no ending. Like, I guess Gareth Edwards in the script, they couldn't figure out how to end it. And he basically came in, edited the film together, reshot something like 25 or 30% of the ending. That's why the trailer, the biggest change in the trailer is, like, you see stuff from the beach scene that look completely different in the trailer than what we got.
Yeah.
He said that he came in and he realized the only way he could end this movie is to kill them all off. And he never went as far as saying that they had endings where they didn't survive, or where they did survive, I should say, but he alluded to it. Like, they were trying to find a way to keep these characters alive, and Gilroy realized when he came in that this had to be a movie about sacrifice, about the rebellion, and he completely reshot things during the reshoots and fixed the film, and obviously the finished project's fantastic.
Yeah.
And Gilroy almost talked like he did enough, he could have gotten director's credit, but he just took a writer's producer credit on it instead. And thankfully for Gilroy, we got the Rogue One we did, because I really enjoy Rogue One a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And but yeah, I mean, you should read it, Matt. It's an interesting article. Apparently, it was a mess of a film until he came off the reshoots. And that the stiffs at Disney weren't happy. They were wondering, were they going to be able to sell this thing? There was some talk about pushing the movie back to May if they had to.
Wow.
You know, and Gilroy came in, was able to save it, and obviously we got a really, really solid film. So, wow. So interesting Star Wars news. So, the next movie on the next episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast we're going to do, we're going to go dark and psychological, and there ain't no other way to say it but fucked up.
Yes.
And you, man, this was your pick.
This was my pick.
When you texted me, I was like, man, that's awfully dark after doing Hellboy, which is kind of fun, and
dark fun.
Planet of the Apes, yeah. And was fun. And so what movie is it, Matt?
It's Seven.
Do you like what you do for a living? These things you see?
You have to wear blinders sometimes. Most times.
Detective William Somerset is looking for a way out.
You're retiring. Six more days and you're all the way gone.
So how long have you lived here?
Too long.
Detective David Mills is looking for a way in.
We'll be spending every waking hour together from now until the time I leave. I'll show you who your friends and enemies are.
Look, I'm with Homicide 5 years, not here.
Now,
ladies and gentlemen, we have ourselves a homicide.
They're caught in a game.
No fingerprints. No witnesses of any kind.
Nope. About the only thing we know about that guy right now is he's totally insane.
Where the price of sin is death.
There are seven deadly sins. Gluttony.
You're going to come take a look at this.
Greed.
No one touches anything.
Sloth, wrath, pride, lust, and envy. Seven. You can expect 5 more of these.
Body was found on Tuesday morning.
I hate this city.
And I get who did this.
This will be the very definition of swift justice.
There are 2 more bodies, 2 more victims.
This guy's methodical, exacting, and worst of all, patient.
He's laughing at us.
He had a gun.
He's 2 murders away from completing his masterpiece.
Hey!
Finish it.
Brad Pitt, Morgan Freeman, Gwyneth Paltrow.
Have you ever seen anything like this?
No.
Seven.
Hey, this is Marky Ramone, and you're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast.
Seven, starring Brad Pitt, a young Brad Pitt, a young Morgan Freeman, who...
Well, a younger Morgan Freeman.
Younger Morgan Freeman.
Seven was 1996, I believe.
Yeah.
And, man, you know, I remember going to the movies and not seeing this, but I remember my dad and my brother went to see it, and I went to see something else. I'd have to look to see what came out that week.
Yeah.
There's probably a reason I went and saw something else, and they went and saw it. And I remember my dad really liking this movie, and then I saw it later on, and I liked it. But, man, it's a dark movie.
Yeah, well, what...
We're going to have to find a way to funny it up and have some fun with it.
What made me... Well, you know, Brad's Pitt has, like, a little, you know, morbid cop humor. You
right.
know, cops, you know, are known for having a morbid sense of humor. He definitely shows it in this film. But what made me think of Seven is we were, you know... For those who don't know, we were going to do a list of best endings or best, like,
surprise endings. For the last episode, we forgot.
Yeah, we forgot it for Planet of the Apes. So in spirit of that, This is a surprise ending film. We'll talk about it then. But
right.
If you want to get a jump on it and look at what we're talking about, you can watch Seven. But and, yeah,
great and it's ending. Pre-creepy Kevin Spacey, yeah. Even though he's creepy in the movie, it's before we found out he touched little boys and yes. stuff, you know?
And Gwyneth Paltrow.
Right, young Gwyneth Paltrow. This is a movie where Brad Pitt started dating her on, I believe, if yes. I remember right. Good film, directed by David Fincher, who's an amazing director. You know, Fincher mm-hmm. did Fight Club. He did The Social Network. Fincher is a really good director. I've liked everything he's done except for Gone Girl. I didn't like Gone Girl.
Yeah, Gone Girl.
I really
was weird.
Wasn't a fan of that film.
My wife likes it, but she's.
It seems like women like that movie, man, because it's about empowerment of women.
She's like, yeah, you see that? I can F you up.
Speaking of empower women, man, when I went to see Ready Player One, I didn't even know they're making an Ocean's 11 remake, essentially, called Ocean's 8 with women.
Yeah.
Like, I understand having more films for women to watch, but, like, at the same time, why? The movie's been done before. You know, it's like,
yeah.
I don't know. Well, you know, just no interest in me personally. But, hey, more power to more films starring women. I'm all for that, you know. But, man, yeah, Seven, man, it's we're going to go to our dark place with this one.
Yes, we are.
And hopefully not too dark.
Too dark.
And so Seven's the next episode of Rebel Radio Podcast. And, it brings me a question. You know, we were talking, Frank was over the other night, even though he's not on the show, and we were talking about, like, what actor have you seen the most movies of? And we were talking, like, Tom Hanks, we've seen a lot of his movies, Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think Tom Cruise is number one, man, because I was counting, I know I've seen 20, of the movies he's made, I've seen 29 Tom Cruise films.
Yeah. Risky Business.
I don't think there's any other actor I've seen more films
Thunder,
from.
Top Gun.
Maybe Harrison Ford might be one.
You saw Tropic Thunder, so that's
I don't count cameos, though. It has to be full films where he's in the movie. Yeah, like, he was in Rock of Ages enough to count it, because he had a role. But no, cameos don't count. It has to be a full movie.
Okay.
And
Jerry Maguire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It has to be Tom Cruise. It's just interesting little tidbit there, most movies. I'd have to look at Harrison Ford. He might be up there, too.
Yeah, Harrison Ford.
Because there's six.
Fugitive.
There's seven films just with Indiana Jones and Star Wars. And Blade Runner would be 8. 9 with the second Blade Runner. Fugitive would be 10. But so,
no, because he was in Force Awakens.
Yeah, that's why
seven.
I said 7.
Oh, yeah, I thought you said
4
6.
Star Wars movies and 3 Indiana Jones.
Oh, okay.
4 Indiana Jones, so that's 8.
Oh, yeah, 4. Yeah, it's 8.
So Harrison Ford. There we go. Might have to think about this, and we'll talk about it in the next episode. So that's it for today, though, man. The RebelRadioPodcast.com is live. Go to it, man. Buy a shirt if you can. It helps us out.
Yeah.
Or a coffee mug. The coffee mug's probably the cheapest item on there.
Yeah, cheapest on there. There's a tote.
And the tote bag. I kind of put that on there for the ladies. You know,
My mom loves tote bags.
The t-shirts are unisex shirts, you know.
Yeah.
So
you and I sex.
Yeah. You and I sex.
That's what I tell my wife it is.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You know, so we appreciate everything people do for the show. And again, we're on the RebelRadioPodcast.com. And follow us on our new Twitter at Rebel Radio Pod, because starting to really push the Twitter and do a lot of promoting on there. And until next time, you know, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
Thank you, as always, for listening. The Rebel Radio Podcast, just go there and do it.
This is Booker T, Hall of Famer, and you're listening to Rubber Radio. Now, can you dig that, sucker?
Hey, Headbangers, this is Rudy Sarzo, and you're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast at TrustMeI'mAJedi.com.